Alan and Jacqueline Carey, husband-wife team. You're currently sitting and looking at their latest body of work called Cut. You will be, let's see, what do you have coming up on the horizon? You're traveling to China soon and completing a catalog about the body of work, whitewash, and paintings by them.
Series of paintings, videos, and silk screens of magnified blood cells.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And we also have Mary Coble with us today. Mary's work can be seen in the back. She does performance artwork, and she will be seen at the Brooklyn Museum in March 2007 as part of the Global Feminism Show. She was one of seven Americans chosen. So we look forward to that. And in the meantime, well, tell us a little bit about your work. And
Well, so lately my work has veered towards the performative end of things. Me using my own body in the work, and I make work that deals with issues that concern me, things that are important to me. Lately I've been focusing on gender, the queer community that I'm a part of, and the body of work I'm working on now is the first time where I haven't actually used myself in the work, but I'm using other people in a kind of performance. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's really funny because this is the first time that we're using ourselves after a long, you know, decade of work of engaging other people in a kind of collective practice and collective testimonial. So it may seem like it's so obvious to have, you know, artists be narcissistic and focus on themselves, but for us it's a revelation. It's a lot of fun, actually.
Yeah, and that's why we enjoyed our opening last night so much, because it was the first time that we really got a chance to like have an opening when that, you know, usually we invite the people who are involved in the projects with us to the openings and care for them and make sure that they're, you know, in this environment and having an okay time with really tough, after talking about really tough issues. So last night was really special for us.
Mm-hmm. And what they're referring to is the two videos that are currently being shown, Just Cut, mm-hmm. where they cut each other's hair, and also, are we calling it Topsy Turvy, or what's the working title?
The working title?
Mommy, Daddy,
Mammy, Daddy.
Mammy, Daddy. Topsy Turvy comes off with a little easier. uh-huh. But anyway, both videos are being shown here at the gallery currently. So.
Yes. So we were sort of debating how to steer this conversation, and I think it might be worth from the audience, if there are particular questions that people have, to leave this as an open conversation and dialogue, so that certainly feel free to voice any questions you might have. But one of the questions that we are faced now that we're working in the kind of performative sculpture, I like to think of it as, with our own presence, our own bodies, is this difference between doing live performance or performance for the camera. And I know that this is having been a witness of one of your performances at Artist Space, it's a question that you've encountered and answered quite beautifully. So, for me, doing the performance live is a little bit a combination of scary and also a sense of like, you know, what is that leap and what does it mean to make that step? And I haven't fully resolved it, at least for myself. But
well, with the performance at Artist Space, for me, it felt like kind of a revelation. Because I was, you know, in front of, I don't know, 20 people, and I was standing there with no shirt on, and I was duct taping my breast. I would duct tape one, the other, then rip it off, and I did it one right after the other.
My God, it was so painful. It was so painful to watch.
Yeah, it was a little painful.
I'm sure it was painful. Oh, I was just like, I kept wanting to go up and just stop, baby, stop, don't do it, not again, ouch!
Yeah, and I could see that from the audience too. Like it was about, I went up there and it was about me and this, you know, the idea of someone being transgendered and duct taping their breast. But then when I stood up there and I could see the audience, I started making connections with people. Mm-hmm. So I would start looking at someone, and I could feel it, I could sense it like building up within them, like, stop doing this, stop looking at me, and I would hold their sight until I felt like they couldn't handle it anymore, and I'd move on to the next person. Mm-hmm. And it became this really intense dialogue between mm-hmm. me and the audience that I'd never really had before, but I really liked it. Like, it was really exciting, and I really felt like I could draw people into it a little bit more. But it made it hard, too, because I felt really bad for all you guys.
Well, I mean, it's almost, you were so still in your face that any of the pain internally that you felt was channeled right to the audience, so that, you know, as an audience member, you know, we are, as an audience, we sort of absorb that pain along with you. It was really interesting because you were so stoic.
Mm-hmm. But you know, when you first did that piece, it was a video work.
Right.
Right. So how did that sort of differ, you know, or what advice can you give them as they look toward maybe doing topsy-turvy here in Washington, D.C. in 2007?
Well, I don't necessarily always think that performance has to be like in person or in video. Like, I think you have to decide for yourself.
Yeah, of course.
What's going to be the best way to present it?
Yeah.
And when I did the piece, first of all, people did watch it on video, and I felt like there was a little bit of a disconnect because it was like you were watching a video of someone do this, but it just wasn't the same. It didn't. People still, I could see they got upset or they thought about what was going on, but I thought it would be a whole different experience if they could be there firsthand. And I don't think one is necessarily better than the other. It's just like a different kind of experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's really interesting because, you know, when we started doing video, we've been doing it for the last 5 years, starting out with a project, the Endurance Project. And recently somebody came to me and they said, you know, you really should think about doing your performances live. And I've been chewing on it for the last few months, because I know that what we try to do is set it up so that it's sort of a one-time sort of situation. With the Endurance video, it was one shot, one take that took place over 24 consecutive hours. Another video that we did was the night before my son was born. I used disciplinary language, let's put it that way, of all of the things that people remembered their parents saying that were harsh and somewhat violent, and it was important that it was the night before he was born, and then with the cut piece, cutting my hair for the first time. So I'm sort of playing with the idea of doing it live.
I mean, I think in some ways, I liked your immediate answer to Shanique, our friend. And basically, Shanique, if you're ever listening to this, your name. But, you know, it's like, I'm not Janet Jackson. It's like, I'm not live performer. Yeah, watch the video.
Yeah, well, because basically she said, you know, it would be just a lot, you would connect with the audience, you know, and it would be exciting for the audience to see. And that was my flip response. I was trying to make it a little bit more intellectual.
But in a way, I'm not sure. Like, if you look at the cut piece, you know, it took us 2.5 hours to cut each other's hair, and I'm not sure it would have been better live than it is on video. I think it's better on video because there's ways in which we're layering sound that brings in a kind of a very specific soundscape that's part of that piece.
It doesn't seem like it's from, it's not like a start to finish, like that's not the point
exactly.
of the piece. The angles, the movement, the cut from one to the other seems to be really important, and from watching that live you wouldn't get all of that.
And it's too long, you know, it's 2.5 hours.
But I want to talk a little bit about, because one of the things we want to discuss with you guys is actually studying the viewpoint and what you're bringing to your performance or your videos in doing that. You with queer issues, you with interracial issues, and we're working together as a couple in this particular piece. Mm-hmm. So do you want to talk a little bit about that and in cut?
Mm-hmm. Well, after Endurance, we had always talked about doing work about ourselves because, you know, we have a black body and a white body available, so we should, like, look at this issue. And it's something that directly impacts us, being an interracial couple in the United States. when my grandfather died, we went to Alabama, and my grandfather died in January. In December of that year, they were the last state to erase the anti-miscegenation laws off the books. So, you know, a couple of weeks after that, we go to Alabama to attend my grandfather's funeral. And so it was a charged visit, and that was one of the things that sort of cemented the idea of doing work that is about the black body and the white body and the historical.
So issues of miscegenation and what it means to be together and how that plays itself out, I think. You make a visual statement when you're in an interracial marriage, particularly a relationship between African American and Caucasian. Mm-hmm. And I think that sort of taps deep feelings that are generational and tie back to slavery and tie back to a kind of period that is not so far removed. You know, it's not the same as our parents' generation or our grandparents' generation, but it's still something you can feel and sense. So we're trying to look at that and examine that. And I think one of the things that history of association and assumption and sort of blood history that you absorb is projected from the viewer onto this piece. So when you look at the power balance between my cutting Jackie's hair and vice versa, there's a difference. There's something different when I'm holding a knife to Jackie's head versus her to me. Mm-hmm. There is, I think, an intention to try to be really as raw and vulnerable and naked as possible. So things, in hindsight, I would do differently. I would go to a gym for 3 months before doing this thing. I'd get rid of that belly. I would, you know, but actually, I think part of that is the
kind
of...
And they all think I'm the vain one, right?
part of that unmasking and just being present and together and intimate, but also kind of pushing an edge of uncomfortability is what helps to sort of trigger the associations for viewers. Mm-hmm. You know, I hope. Yeah.
And this is important to you to have people view your life a little bit.
I think it's not only viewing our life, because, you know, I think people can look at this and not necessarily know it's us and still experience the work of art. I think it's more about engaging people in the conversation of race and what that means today and how far we've come, but yet how far we haven't, you know, and sort of take a second to sort of measure where we stand in relationship to each other and in relationship to a conversation on race that's ongoing.
And when we shot this, we were really trying to think that if people didn't know us personally and didn't know that we were married, what their experience of the piece would be.
Was the experience different for you guys than, like, you had this idea of what you, like, this message and what you're going to do, but did it feel different for you doing it than you thought it would?
Yes.
Like, it was,
you know, the idea when you're sitting down to dinner and thinking, like, wouldn't it be cool for us to do this, you know, and actually doing it, I was surprised at the emotion that came forth, you know, the sound of me getting my hair cut, by somebody I trusted, you know, but still was afraid of, you know, and just, you know, a lot of our personal history started bubbling up, you know, because it's about the black body and the white body, but it's also about a marriage and it's also about a relationship and how, you know, the words that you say or the gestures that you do at one time can be used to cut a person and hurt that same person that you love later. Which sounds romantic, but when that person is standing over you with a straight razor, you really remember.
So I think, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's well said. Yeah, I think, you know, when we were talking about this for a long time, Jackie was like, no, I'm not convinced. You know, why should we do this? You know, this sounds you know, we were trying to work through it, and I think it was really a situation where it was following intuition. Mm-hmm. Jackie asked me, like, you're asking me to cut my hair for what?
Yeah.
Why? Tell me right now why. So it was like back and forth, and then it was like, okay, how do we do this? How do we, like, mm-hmm. and yeah.
I was looking at some of your like past work, and you guys cover a lot of things. You mm-hmm. have, I mean, like the homeless in Seattle, mm-hmm. Gun violence, mm-hmm.
police in New York,
police corruption,
police, yeah, pregnant moms, mm-hmm. like so many different things. And I was just curious, like how is it that you decide upon what you want to do? Do you ever worry that you're spreading yourself like too thin, like you're talking about too many things that are important to you, or do you just this is what you want to talk about, and you do it, and that's it.
Well, we also have had conversations, you know, after a project is finished that we didn't, you know, we don't want to be ambulance chasers, you know, moving from one issue to another issue to another issue. So that's something that we've discussed a lot.
I think it's sort of a situation. It is a concern, mm-hmm. definitely from a market awareness and savvy is a concern, because the market doesn't like artists who keep changing visually, aesthetically, this, that. So we're sort of, in a way, I think when you look at the body of work, there are formal elements that link things together in a way that are very clear and very hold together the body of work. But it makes it difficult for the elevator speech, right? Yeah. Oh, they do this. And then, so if you talk about it in a way that, in some ways, for the work that's issue-driven, like endurance. Oh, it's the project they did with homeless kids, right? Mm-hmm. So it's, but that's takes away from kind of deeper conversation of the formal issues right. that are playing within the work and the aesthetic issues and how that falls into engaging the audience. And like, there's a lot of deeper levels, and I think it's hard for the work to. I think once you realize that the depth of that, it starts to have more significance within the marketplace, but it makes it a lot harder for a dealer to be able to present that work and sell it and move it forward. It's easier, perhaps, I think, in a way for the market to get behind work where we're looking at ourselves, right? Because there's an expectation that artists are making work from their own experience. We're not homeless. We've never been homeless. Why are we doing work about homeless kids, right? So it's like, I think, you know,
even when we talk about the work, I mean, you know, one of the first questions, for example, when we did the piece, the police brutality piece, was, you know, the audience members, one of the first things they would say, well, have you ever experienced police brutality? Have you ever been brutalized? And, you know, the same with the homeless piece. Have you ever been homeless? You know. And so when we talk about the work, we find, like when we're doing lectures, we find that it's hard to have a balance. Because, yes, you want to talk about the issue, but you don't always want to talk about content with work. Like, this is the content. This is the context. But then, another times, you know, there are other times when you try to talk about just the formal elements of the work and, you know, intent and subcontent and all of those sorts of things, then it sounds like you really disconnected yourself and it has a hint of exploitation to it. So it's really hard to balance
content. But I think also to get back to your question, is like, that's one of the beauties of being a team. We're two artists, we can, like, manage more than one body of work. So the public engaged works they take longer to come to fruition, but they're still an active part of our discourse and our practice. And this summer we'll be in Philadelphia for 3 weeks working with teenagers who are parents and doing a kind of double portraiture. So it'll be both kind of image of mother and child and father and child, same child. So that there's, you know, or father and child, but where's the mother and child? So looking at the, I think oftentimes when people think of teen parents, they think of just mother and child in their mind, and what happens, what is that, what's the dynamic, where's the father, what's the relationship, how does that happen, what is that, how do you start, once you start making that conscious, our conscious choice to sort of create that frame, what will we encounter in a kind of social context and narrative that will start to inform sort of deeper, tougher issues of how, as a society, we're sort of making making opportunities, you know, because it starts, I think in a way we like to take on projects that tap into race and class and disparate, like the kind of issues of economic disparity or place. So it's, you know, it's fun to be now starting to think of that public work, publicly engaged work, and at the same time be thinking of the next performance that we'll be doing.
And when you, when people approach you about your work, do they approach you usually from content, or, you know, how do they title your work?
No, a lot of times they'll approach me from, wow, I can't believe you did this, or how could you have had that many tattoos, or how could you have done this to yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Which I kind of then direct towards the reason behind the work, because that's, I don't want to be overshadowed by doing these acts, because it's not just a matter of, wow, I can get this many tattoos,
yeah,
or I can stand up for an hour and tape my breasts. You know, that's just, that's kind of like the effect of the piece. Like, that's what had to happen. So then I just try to talk about the reasons behind it, what went on. And I'll talk about other, you know, the, it hurt and whatever, whatever, too, because people want to know that, and that's okay, they ask that. But I just want to inform them a little bit along the way.
Mm.
But what you've been able to do in your, her projects are very heavily researched,
mm-hmm,
and is identified like sort of an unknown subgroup of a subgroup. You know, when you're talking about transgender, or we'll talk about the new project you're talking about, you,
right,
know, people who are neither transgendered or, you know, talk a little bit about that and how you identify that and how that's important to you to bring it to life.
Yeah, things that I just notice, like,
mm-hmm,
in not necessarily my life, but communities that I'm a part of or that I see, like, there are drag kings,
mm-hmm,
who, you know, women dressing up as men for performances, just for performance aspect. You know, they go to a club and they do it, and maybe they don't get up and perform, but maybe they just want to, you know, go out that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are, like, transgender people who honestly feel like they have been born into the wrong body and that they're a different gender. But then there's a space in between. Like, what if you're not transgendered? You don't feel like you're born into the different body, but you're not a perform. It's what you're doing isn't performance, but you want to, say, a woman wants to walk around with facial hair, dressing like a man. Like, what? Like, so what are they? We don't really have a word or a place for them. It's just kind of like this weird person.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's been interesting, trying to think about that. Like, there are lots of people who I've spoken to, and I would label them as transgendered. I'd be like, so let's talk about being transgendered. And they're like, I'm not. And I'd be like, oh, I'm sorry. Okay, what is going on? And they're like, well, I'm not really a guy, but I identify more as a guy, but I'm not really a girl. This is just who I am.
Mm-hmm.
This is who it is. And so that interests me, like that space of someone just being who they are,
mm-hmm,
and us as a society not being okay with that, just because they don't fit into these categories that we've made.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the research is an important thing, and I always like to bring that to light. I want,
mm-hmm,
people to understand that I'm just not like making this up, like this is something,
mm-hmm,
that's going on and is important, I think, in like our society.
Mm.
Your work is also very well researched too. I mean,
mm-hmm,
I see that when I with you guys who are both with me, all over,
mm-hmm,
the gallery, is that the work is very well researched and it does have a very strong social viewpoint. And that's,
mm-hmm,
what, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I find amazing about all of your works, you know,
mm-hmm,
and what you do. But I also wanted to, I mean, you're still young in your career, we don't know if you'll be doing public artworks or not, but a lot of your work has really been out there,
mm-hmm,
sort of publicly installed, and now you're sort of bringing yourselves in a little,
mm-hmm,
bit.
Mm-hmm.
It was a big move for us.
Yeah.
It was something, you know, we talked about, but then do we really want to do it, you know, and moving back and forth on it, and finally we really took the lead.
I think it's important to go where it makes you feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. You know, the project in Philadelphia, you know, we understand how to make that happen, right? It may seem daunting for someone who hasn't done a lot of that kind of work, but sort of working with multiple agencies and people and communities and oral histories and finding a way of gathering that and filtering it and making ultimately an aesthetic experience that engages people in the stories of the participants is something that we can do really well, and we know how to do really well. Looking at ourselves is completely foreign territory, and it's exciting and it's invigorating, and we're figuring out how to do it well. Mm-hmm. So it's, but I think there are things that are consistent when you look at the body of work. These photographs are, you know, in some ways a kind of contextual frame for the video. There's this relationship between the role of the photograph and the video and the performance that I think is very specific and very similar to endurance, or the relationship between the manhole covers and the audio testimony in a piece that we did a decade ago when we first met. There's a relationship between these different elements and how they sort of shape a space of engagement. You know, I wish I was down here for the performance where you were tattooing yourself. I wish I had, I regret not coming down, because I really, it was on my calendar to do, and then something happened, and I was like, oh, well, okay. But when I see that photograph, it's just, it's a stunning work of art. It's really beautiful. Mm-hmm. And it makes it's the kind of way of sort of imprinting an acknowledgement of all of these different people who've been killed, right? Yeah. From hate crime, you know. And you know, our world, our country is in such an ugly place right now, you know, and it's just, you know, I really appreciate that piece. It's really beautiful.
And the part that resonated with me the most is the fact that it comes from a specific social and political viewpoint, but mm-hmm. it always circles back to humanity.
Right.
And I think that's the most difficult but yet most beautiful thing to do when you're making work like that, is just, you know, to go from the specific to the general and have it sort of tumble over itself so that it resonates with me, although I might not be personally connected to that issue.
Right. And yeah, it's about people.
It's
like
about people
dying and hurting each other, mm-hmm. which is something that I think anyone, like, who cares what you are or what you believe mm-hmm. or whatever, like, we're all mm-hmm. people. And mm-hmm.
and it sounds kind of, when you say it, it doesn't sound as, you know, eloquent and poignant as it really is when you see it and you experience it. And, you know, it's, you feel it at a certain point in your body and you realize, like, this is really something amazing that really can't be described, and that piece just really hit it. It's like all net.
But I'm sure at some point you face the same question that we faced when you're doing this work that really engages kind of grieving process and acknowledgement that also exists in the marketplace, and that we want it to exist in the marketplace because the marketplace within the art world is where this kind of process of placing work and getting work into institutions starts to happen, and that way, that's where kind of individual work takes on a larger and longer public memory, right? So I think it's important to do that, but yet it also creates this kind of internal conflict, perhaps.
But you summed up really well in an email.
Oh, you didn't make money off.
What did you say? It was just something like, you know, we were talking about what we would talk about.
Right.
You have to say it.
I'm not sure. I said something like, have you ever felt like people were saying you're making this work that has this important message and it's so political, but then they're like, you're showing it in a gallery and you're preaching to the choir, so why even bother? Like, what's the point of doing it
mm-hmm.
when it's going to be in a gallery? And I don't agree with him saying, I mean, I don't think that's the way it works mm-hmm. for me. Mm-hmm. I think it's like a stepping stone. Like, but if you make work like that and you, like, keep it in your bedroom or, like, show a friend, like, that's cool, but I think you're going to reach much more people by working like a system that's in place sometimes. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's helpful. And people assume that what people who walk into the gallery are like these totally like open-minded, like they're going to totally, you know, dig your work and understand it. But I don't know. I don't think that's necessarily a right assumption. Like, mm-hmm. tons of people walk in galleries every day. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean they're coming from where I'm coming from or know what I know or believe what I believe. Mm-hmm. So.
And it's true. I mean, when you're doing work, for example, with homeless teenagers, and then it's shown in a gallery and it has a price tag on it, and, you know, mm-hmm. in that specific piece, you know, people are talking about living for a week on $15 a week, you know, for a whole week, and eating out of garbage cans, but yet it's shown in a gallery and it's got, like, you know, an $800 frame around it. You know, those are the issues that you're dealing with, and that's why I love that quote so much, because it's really something that you grapple with and you work and you chew on, so that you don't get that smell of exploitation, you don't get that smell of opportunism and things.
Well, I mean, how many people would go up and talk to all those homeless kids in Seattle? I mean, like, who would, do people often get to hear these stories like this? I mean, you might read about it or hear it on the news or something, but mm-hmm. you have someone like, say, like, this is what's up with my life, mm-hmm. and you get to see that. And mm-hmm. even those of us who come into the gallery, like, probably not many of us have experienced that. Mm-hmm. And people all over the world know about this piece now. I mean, people know this is going on, and so it might spur just that little bit of something that then they could take to someone else, and change could happen from that. Mm-hmm.
And that's where the advocacy comes in, and it stays in regardless of the context. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are there any questions? Anybody have?
Yeah, I just had a question. And you just hit on the top a little bit right now, but what is the goal of your work? I mean, you know, when you show it in a gallery, it's sort of, people understand, people know about these issues already, mm-hmm. you know, so are you just addressing them because you feel the absolute need to do it, or are you hoping to change beliefs, change minds, you know, with what you do?
Oh, I love to personally think of being able to sort of create a kind of restlessness within people that'll help to shift thinking and change point of view and change perspective. Absolutely. You know, but also all of the work is really has a kind of personal engagement and a connection to our own story and our own lives and our own experiences. And you know, for me, it's important to be part of a kind of public conversation and public discourse. So,
and for me, the personal is there. Yes, I would like to change minds in the big picture, but also I like to think of my involvement in it and my implication in it, and that, you know, when I go out to dinner, that there are people who, you know, are hungry, and what have I done? What have I done to help that happen, and how am I implicated in all of those things? How am I implicated in police brutality from these articles that I read, these little tiny articles? So-and-so was brutalized and killed in jail, and I read it and I kept going and I kept on with my life, and that's where the humanity issue comes in, because my hands are dirty as well.
And I think sometimes, Matt, that people think they know, like people think they're aware, but then they're really not. I mean, maybe they look at a newspaper and read something, or that, like, they have, like, a gay friend, so they know, like, all about, like, what's going on. And sometimes I think we assume that things are fine when they're not. Like, lots of times I've heard people say, well, you know, being gay is totally socially acceptable now. Like, why? Like, what's the problem? Like, it's fine. And sometimes living here, I do get comfortable, but then I realize, like, what? It's not fine. Like, maybe I'm in like a big city, but yet, like, in 1 year, 5 trans people still were murdered in the city. You know, like, it's not fine anywhere, and I think that's where people get hurt, mm-hmm. thinking it's fine, like, no big deal, like, you can walk down the street and mm-hmm. hold someone's hand, so mm-hmm. the world is perfect. So I think I do things, but sometimes just because, like, it's not fine, like, wake up, maybe one person can have one question from something they see of mine, and that, for me at least, I think that could change everything, like, mm-hmm. just one person thinking something who maybe has other influences that I don't have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like that very much. I mean, and for this personal work, we have a son, and he's biracial in the United States, and there's a whole history. It seems like it's fine now because you see little biracial children or multiracial children in Gap ads and things like that, but I have to address this history. It, because he's going to have to address it in some way.
You know, and I think when you look at projects like the one we'll be doing in Philadelphia this summer, you know, it's not, I don't think we probably would have arrived at doing portraits of teen parents if we weren't parents ourselves, you know. We weren't in that midst of understanding what this relationship is between mother and child and father and child, and how does that, how does our experience as parents relate to what will then become this other kind of public conversation that will be looking at teen parents and then looking at race and looking at poverty and looking at, you know, is it possible to, is the father known or not? And, you know, in what cases is it not known? Is it a family member? Is it this? Is it that? Like, are there all these different issues that come into play? And it also sort of starts to touch into this larger question of that the religious right is continuing to use within a kind of political arena of, you know, is abortion something that is permitted or not? And so I see that work of art as being something that's going to be a touchstone for a lot of different tough social and political issues that we're grappling with as a nation right now. Mm-hmm. And in a way that, you know, I'm not really proud of where our country's going. I'd like to see more restlessness and more people agitating, you know, and more what little we know. I spoke to a reporter who has been embedded with the army in Iraq, and he just was here last night, and it's just like understanding how much the filter impacts what we actually get to know and how different the story is from what we read about or see in the news is shocking to me, and we're complacent in that as citizens. And so I think it's important that we are, as artists, able to use the freedom we have. We can say whatever the fuck we want. We can talk about things and engage people in making work, and so why not do that in a way that relates to our own experiences and the broader world. You know, I know your work, Mary, it's changed my understanding, you know, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
you know, and for me, with this project that Brad's referring to, I think of my own mental processes or that happened. For example, when we were invited to go to Philadelphia, they said, you're going to be working with truant youth. And I, you know, think, truant youth. Truant youth. And you get this image of just rebellious little hellions running around, running amok, and just, you know, something crazy like that. And then you think about it, you know, what would make a child be truant in school? You know, what's going on? And a lot of times when, you know, you do a little bit of investigation, you find that these children have adult responsibilities. They're either taking care of their own children, they're maintaining households with their family. If it's the eldest child, they're supporting 3 or 4 adults within a family. So then it moves from this idea of truant youth to where does childhood and adulthood intersect? where do they collide, what does it mean to be a child and have adult responsibilities, you know, and then that it starts opening up. But, you know, when I think of how I thought of it, you know, it's completely different. So it's personal in that sense.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
Well, I was, with your photographs of your performance and your videos, I mean, they're clearly works of art, and I just wondered whether, you know, if they're works of art and they also document an ephemeral experience, mm-hmm. but whether you ever had in the past or considered, like, incorporating physical evidence of the event when you show the work, like, the hair, or something to do with the tattooing, like, in terms of the physical... physical evidence also. Have you ever incorporated that when you've shown, like, a photograph, the photographs or
videos? We haven't, but in plastic bags in our studio is the hair. So, and is the knife. So, I mean, I think it will come around and have a kind of usefulness. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I did say on the tattoo piece, we had pieces of watercolor paper that as I was being tattooed, they would put it up on the wall. So, yeah, I did save, like, that evidence. Any work I've done, like, I save stuff. I may never, like, use it.
The ball of tape?
Well, the first time I did it, I had the tape. The second time, you know, we were in New York, and I had to get back here, and I was like, am I going to put the tape in a bag? And I let go of it. Like, I was like, I don't need it. I'm just going to let go. But for the tattooing, it was important. Like, it was part of the piece to have the blood impressions. Yeah. Yes. So sometimes, yeah, I keep things. Sometimes I force myself to let go of it because it doesn't matter.
Well, I'd like to see that in a museum. You know, I'd like to see a museum own that work. It would be important, I think.
The museum does own the work.
Which museum?
The first one. Actually, we've got the complete set of blood impressions.
Wow, fantastic.
Last one, which I treasure.
Yes, absolutely.
Any other questions? Or?
Well, the only other side thing is, you actually got you to Marina Abramovich in her early work with her partner.
Ole,
wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah. It's amazing work. I'm very much a fan of 70s performance. I love that work. There's an immediacy that's there. It's fabulous work. It's also hard to do performative work when you know, they've set the bar so high. But yeah, I'm aware of it and I really like a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
She's not going to let me strap her to the underneath side of a bathtub with the water flow,
yeah.
So I breathe for her, though. She doesn't quite trust me that
we
much.
The bow
and arrow.
Jackie's like, are you crazy? No way.
I'm going to let Brad point a bow and arrow at my heart. Are you kidding?
Oh, no.
I don't know. You know, this is on tape, so who knows? Maybe 5 years from now, yeah, I'll let Brad point a bow and arrow. God, come visit me in the hospital. send me some flowers or something. But yeah, I really like that work a lot. And there are two pieces that I would love to revisit.
Mm-hmm. Or reinterpret?
Reinterpret. One, should I talk about it?
Sure.
It's one piece that's really intriguing to me, and I think it's them. I saw it at some film festival, and it was a couple. They drilled holes in the bathtub and put a U-brace and bolted one of the artists, to the bottom of the bathtub and then filled the bathtub with water, and the other artist had to breathe for the one that was bolted under the water. Yes.
Trust.
That's a lot of trust, you know. So
you're not quite there with me yet.
You know.
Yeah, we're working on it. But I also think that, you know, probably a lot of the work will be dealing with sort of blood and skin and kind of genetic sort of mapping of what does it mean to be black and white and how does that relate. There might be work that is a kind of skin graphing of graphing Jackie's skin on mine and vice versa. I don't know. I mean, I think there's ways of working within this arena. There's one piece that we've been looking at and trying to figure out how to make it work, which is probably the next to the performance, and it's us wrestling each other. So,
yeah,
so that's been around it's been around the corner and there, but not fully realized yet.
Yeah,
but I think
we're trying to lift it from the visual of us actually wrestling each other. How do you take it to the next level and make it more poetic? Which is what we've tried to do with these other pieces, because it's basically a haircut and that's basically us just spinning around. And how do you like open that up a little bit? But I'm really interested in the public project that you're doing.
The public project with the hair?
Is it the new one? Or is it a new one? I'm not sure. You talked about where you're using other people.
I am gathering, talking with people, transgender people, and specifically who have facial hair, because I'm interested in the idea of the masculine and like this, like the beard, like that makes you like the ultimate guy. And so I'm just talking to these people, kind of like what you guys do, put a camera up and then just talk. And a lot of times, they've led the conversation into just me watching it, getting really like, wow, this is really intense and nice. So right now it's just a kind of my way of gathering information, what I do. Like, I research it, I talk to people, take people, and who knows what exactly it's going to be. Yeah.
Wow.
That was cool.
Yeah.
Any last questions?
I can ask anything.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Lee. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Come and see the show.
Wonderful.